And hopefully we will have a few members coming as we start. I think Senator Kubley is here. Senator Kubley, welcome to the committee. Since you're here, and I assume your testifiers are here, maybe we could start.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I do have a delete all amendment. You probably don't have a quorum, no, is that correct?
We don't have a quorum yet, so if we could wait a few minutes, if we could start with the testimony.
Sure, that'd be fine, Madam Chair.
They would be coming. We usually do this, so when we call the meeting, they start coming, but hopefully they will be here.
All right. Well, Senate File 3313 comes to me from one of the hospitals in my district out at Canby. It's just a few miles from the South Dakota border. But, they have a doc there who is married to another doc who lives in North Carolina. And, they're trying to get him to move to Canby. So, I think we've got a couple people here that can testify to this amendment, Madam Chair, and I think I'll ask them to come to the table. One of them is Bob Selman, who is the administrator of the hospital in Canby, and he can tell you something about their need to attract another doctor to their community and why this one would make an ideal candidate for them, and I think I'll turn it over to him at this time.
Thank you, Senator Kubley. Welcome to the community, to the committee, Mr. Selman.
Yes, Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Robert Selman, and I'm the CEO at Sanford Health in Canby, Minnesota. I want to thank you, first of all, for the opportunity to testify on Senate File 3313 today and urge your support. A little background, Canby is a small rural community on the very western border of Minnesota, halfway between Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and Fargo. It is over 100 miles to each of those cities. The facility includes a critical access hospital, a federally qualified rural health clinic, both of which are certified by CMS under the federal programs. The service area includes parts of Yellow Medicine, Lacaparl, Lincoln, and Lyon counties in Minnesota and parts of Dual County in South Dakota. The service area is also a federally qualified health professional shortage area. Our rural health clinic employs six physicians, one of which is a general surgeon. The remaining five are primary care physicians. One of the five primary care physicians will be leaving Canby later this fall. One of the physicians that we employ, Dr. Jaya Patla, is a foreign medical graduate, and she completed her primary care residency in South Carolina and has been with us now nearly 5 years. Following the completion of her residency and her employment with us, her husband, Madhu Patla, was accepted into the same residency program and has completed that residency and is currently employed in Columbia, South Carolina. When a foreign medical graduate comes to the U.S. to further their education, they come with an educational visa, often referred to as a J-1 visa. Upon completing their residency program, they're obligated to return to their home country unless they receive a waiver allowing them to stay here if they qualify for a work permit, which is normally the H-1B visa. The federal Conrad State 30 program permits states to sponsor up to 30 foreign medical graduate physicians per year, but they must work in a federally qualified health manpower shortage area or a medically underserved area. If such a physician practices in a community such as ours for 3 years, they are then qualified to apply for a green card to remain in the United States without returning to their home country. This is a very important tool in maintaining appropriate medical services in otherwise underserved areas throughout the United States. Given that background, that brings us to Senate File 3313 today. We wish to employ Dr. Madhu Patla so that he can transfer from South Carolina to Canby, Minnesota, where he and his wife and son can be together and they can both practice their specialty of family medicine in Canby. If Dr. Patla can apply for a license in Minnesota, he has told us that he will come to Canby. That will replace the doctor that is leaving later this fall. On the other hand, if this does not occur, it is obvious that as soon as possible, his wife, Dr. Jaya Patla, will most likely leave Canby to join her husband where he will be practicing. Dr. Jayapatla has indicated her interest in staying in Canby, and we're very much hopeful that that will happen. The people of the community have found her to be very effective and a very qualified physician and want to continue to see her practice in the community. The current state licensure law, embodied within Section 147, includes one limitation that currently prevents the board from granting the license to Dr. Madhupatla, and that is the fact that he completed Part 3 of his United States medical licensing exams, referred to as USMLE, in 4 attempts rather than the required 3. Other than that, he currently meets all other statutory requirements for licensure. In addition, Dr. Madhupatla is board certified by the American Board of Family Practice, or American Board of Family Medicine, and holds licenses in South Carolina, Florida, and South Dakota. I believe that I want to talk about this delete all amendment, and I'm not sure that you all have that. I guess there was some discussion here, but the language that we initially introduced in Senate File 3313 has subsequently been replaced with a delete all amendment prepared by the Board of Medical Practice, which amends the current law by allowing an applicant to complete the USLME exam with 4 attempts, providing the applicant is also board certified and the holder of a valid medical license in another state. As indicated, this will allow Dr. Patla to make application for a Minnesota license. Our council met with the Board of Medical Practice and its staff to discuss this matter and secure their cooperation. Based on his report, it is my understanding that the board, which voted to be neutral on this bill, although they prepared the language in the delete all amendment, they do not object to this because it moves toward a feature that feels is important to maintain high-quality medical services in our state, and that is the ongoing measure of competency. In this case, that is achieved by the board certification requirement. Certification by a specialty board is granted only upon the successful completion of rigorous exams in a doctor's field of practice, in this case, family practice, and periodic reexamination and certification is required. Therefore, I'm asking for your support with the passage of Senate File 3313, which would permit Dr. Patla to make application to the Board of Medical Examiners and be considered for licensure in Minnesota. Madam Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to present this testimony to you.
Thank you, Mr. Selman. Senator Kubli, do you have another testifier?
Sure. Well,
we have quorum now, Senator Kubli. However, the language that we have for your amendment right now is really not the language that we were supposed to have in front of us, so they are working on copying the actual language. So they will be here. The staff is working on it right now. So unfortunately, these copies that we have are not the ones you want.
Okay.
Today.
Well, I know there was a problem with the effective date, Madam Chair. Apart from that, I wasn't aware of another issue with the amendment, but I thought we probably could have done that orally, but.
Yes. Thank you, Senator Kubli. Senator Prentice-Solin and Senator Coring.
Madam Chair and Senator Kubli, I'm not sure why there's a delete all amendment, and maybe if you could point out the differences. I thought all it did was extend to 4 years the period of time in which they had to, or four attempts, the period of time in which they had to.
Madam Chair and Senator Brettner-Solon, that was what the original bill did. The Board of Medical Practice, gave us some language that said if they were certified to practice in another state and had passed the, certain groups, if there is current certification by a specialty board of the American Board of Medical Specialties, the American Osteopathic Association Bureau of Professional Education, or the Royal College of Physicians and Surgeons of Canada, and they are currently licensed in another state.
That's okay. I think we need to see the amendment. I thought it was only a minor change, so.
Well, that's the change over the original bill.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Senator Prentice-Solin, Senator Kubli did ask for that. It's just that there was an additional date change to this version that was going to be distributed.
Okay.
And we don't have that yet. Now, we could review this, which is the major But then we have to do it again because we have to change the date. Senator Coring.
Madam Chair, so there is a delete all amendment?
Yes.
And,
yes, Senator Coring.
And Madam Chair, are all the testifiers done?
No. That's why we started with the testimony.
We can. Mr. Deal is here, and he has a little more information. He was actually at the Board of Medical Practice when they made the decision to move ahead.
Senator Kubli, if we do have another, if you wish to testify, we could proceed and the staff will be here by then.
Yeah, well, I can turn it over to Mr. Deal at this point.
Please go ahead and introduce yourself.
Madam Chair, Senator Kubli, members of the committee, I'm John Deal. I'm counsel to the hospital in Canby, and I was representing the hospital and attending the Board of Medical Practice meeting. They had an emergency meeting of their licensing committee last Saturday morning to consider this measure. As Bob testified, their official position is they're neutral on the bill. But the delete all amendment is the language that the board, with their attorney general advisors, drafted. And the position of their committee and the board was positive to this. And I thought it might be of interest to the committee simply to note that while they have always had the three test, you have to pass a test within three tries, and this is moving it back to four tries. And that raises a question, and in talking to some of you before this meeting, people are wondering, well, does this affect the quality of doctors? And there's a National Association of Medical Licensing Boards, Federation of Licensing Boards, and they track data regarding test results as it relates to underlying quality. And there is a break point after three times. But our board drafted this language and is not opposed to this because they feel that by adding the board certification requirement and the sort of the double test of being licensed in another state, and this particular doctor is licensed in three other states, that in fact gives them more strength. The Board of Medical Practice Clinical Competency Task Force is looking to go to this board certification standard. So they welcome this. They feel that that additional test, in fact, outweighs going to four tries. So just in case you were wondering whether this is weakening the standards for practice in Minnesota, the board thinks that with the board certification feature, it actually strengthens the standards. But we've had a lot of trouble drafting. It's really down to the numbering of these paragraphs in the amendment. And I apologize. We apparently didn't get the right draft to Katie.
Thank you, Mr. Deal. Yes, Senator Kubli, we do not have right now the amendment with the numbering that we need to have in place. So the staff is working on it. We could table it and come back to it, if
Madam,
that's okay with the members.
Okay.
Senator Coring.
Madam Chair, I would just say I'm not going to make a motion, but I would think that the chair can – I am supportive of this bill, but I would think that the chair could lay this aside until the delete all amendment is ready, and then when that's ready, we can move forward with that. I'd be ready to move the delete all amendment at that time. But I would just ask the chair to lay this aside and then move on to the next bill. And then when the amendment is ready, then we could move forward with that again.
Thank you, Senator Coring.
Well, Madam Chair, some of you apparently have the delete all amendment that Ms. Kavanagh had, but it did not contain the effective date. That's the only change that I'm aware of from the current delete all. So
we haven't seen anything.
Senator Kubli, apparently there is something else that they are working and they had to reorganize the language. So why don't we lay this aside and then in a few minutes we can come back to it. So we will hear Senator Deal and then we will come back to it.
That'd be
after
fine.
Senator Deal.
Thank you, Madam
Thank
Chair.
You, Senator Kubli. So we will proceed with Senate File 2884 and we will come back to Senate File 3313 from Senator Kubli when we get the amendment. Welcome to the committee, Senator Deal.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thanks.
Senate File 2884 is a bill to make some adjustments in the way the four nursing homes are reimbursed. And I have some amendments, Madam Chair, that I would like to put on this bill to start with, because there's some things that have changed since it was introduced. And so there is an A1 amendment there, and then there's an amendment to the amendment, which is the A2 amendment.
Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Coring.
Is it the did I hear correctly, the A2 amendment? I would move the A2 amendment to get the bill in the shape that Senator Dill would like to have it be in.
Thank you, Chair.
Madam Chair, let's start with the A1 amendment first.
A1? Okay. I would so move the A1 amendment.
Any questions about the amendment? If not, all of these...
Actually, Madam Chair, we don't have the A1. We have the A2 amendment first.
Got the A1 right here.
The A1 is in the folder, members.
Okay.
Any questions on the A1 amendment from members? If not, all of those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The amendment is adopted.
And then, Madam Chair, I would the appropriate motion then to be the A2 amendment to the A1 amendment?
Is that correct, Senator Deal?
Madam Chair, maybe before you deal with that, I'll just explain a couple things here. There are four nursing homes, or perhaps more, in the state that have been sold from the public sector to the private sector. And as a result of this sale, the employees that were on PERA and want to continue on PERA need to have some way to fund that pension program. And the bill before you provides for allowing the employee pension costs at the four listed nursing facilities be treated as public employees' retirement association costs. And the amendment to the amendment makes some adjustments as to which four nursing homes we're talking about. Now, on the A1 amendment, which you approved, the first two that are listed there in Meeker and McLeod County are in my Senate district. The third one is in Jackson County, which is Senator Vickerman's district. And the fourth one in Renville County, which is in Senator Kubley's district, no longer needs to be on the list. So we're taking that one off, and we're adding one from Senator Stump's district, which is up in Pennington County at Thief River Falls. And that's what this second amendment is about.
Thank you, Senator Dill. So Renville is coming out and will be replaced by Pennington, correct?
Right.
We're doing that with the second amendment if it is adopted. Any questions from members? So Senator Coring
moves the amendment to the amendment.
A2 amendment, which is amendment to the A1. Any questions from members? If not, all of those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, the amendment is adopted. Senator Dill.
Madam Chair and members, this change is not going to cost the state of Minnesota any money. As a matter of fact, it may even save some money, so it's not going to cost anything. And to explain this situation to you in more detail, I have some people with me. To my right is Mary Ellen Wells, who is the president of the Hutchinson Area Healthcare and Burns Manor, and to my left is Bill Ward, who is the administrator for the Dassel Nursing Home, and Linda Krenz is also here, administrator from the Hutchinson Burns Manor. And to help provide some insight from the standpoint of state government, I also have Greg Tabell, who is the audit director for DHS, who will provide some further information. But to start with, I'd like to have Mary Ellen Wells, the president of the Hutchinson Area Healthcare, provide testimony.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Wells.
Thank you very much. And thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee, Senator. Thank you for hearing this important request. Again, my name is Mary Ellen Wells, and I'm the president of Hutchinson Area Healthcare, which is also the overseer of Burns Manor Nursing Home. I'm here today representing not just Burns Manor and Hutchinson, but also the three other long-term care facilities. Lakeside Healthcare in Dassel, Colonial Manor in Lakefield, and Oakland Park Nursing Home, located in Thief River Falls. Our four organizations have a common dilemma that we're here today to hopefully rectify. In summary, these four homes transitioned last year from government ownership to not-for-profit status, private ownership. When this occurred, we established private pension funds So we transferred from PERA contributions to private pension funds. For our employees, this replaced the PERA. And historically, PERA benefits were recorded separately and used as part of the formula to determine the reimbursement that we receive from the state. Now, typically, nursing homes in the state record these pension benefits as part of their costs. With the transition to different ownership and to a different benefit mechanism, we no longer show the PERA expense. It doesn't mean we don't have that expense still being incurred. And so, therefore, we're subject to losing a great deal of reimbursement that will impact the pension benefits that we're able to provide our employees. Therefore, we're asking for special legislation that would recognize these pension funds in the reimbursement formula for our nursing homes. There are 271 employees in total today impacted among the four institutions, and it's totaling about $450,000. Now, it's not, I might word it slightly different in saying it's a recognition that this is a cost that should continue. It's not lost funding, and it's not an additional expense for the state. It's a continuing, if you will. So it's budget neutral. It's simply a transferring of the cost from being recognized as a PERA expense to a 401k expense in our formulas. And as you know, the financial viability of nursing homes, it's extremely tight. And this kind of a loss would be devastating to us, to the organizations, to our employees, and to the communities we're serving. So finally, I just want to point out that this is not the last time that you have taken steps to correct this type of situation. There was legislative action taken in 2000 for the facility in Lake City. Again, my colleagues and I would be happy to answer any questions you have. And again, thank you for allowing us to testify here today.
Thank you, Ms. Wells. Who's next? Senator
Madam Dale. Chair, Bill Ward is sitting next to me. He's the administrator for the Dassel Nursing Home. Did you have anything you wanted to fill in yet, Bill? Or?
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Ward. If you could please introduce yourself.
Madam Chair, my name is Bill Ward. I'm administrator of Lakeside Healthcare Center in Dassel, and I would echo every comment that you've already heard here already. The only thing that I can add that I think is important is that long-term care is already very highly under stress, and this would just be one more huge stressor for these particular four facilities. And there would be, in my mind, no way to avoid having the employees of our home have a significant impact in their pensions. So I just want to emphasize again that we're talking about the employees that are caring for our parents, our grandparents, and there really is no private dollars or no tree in the backyard to pluck this money off of if we do lose it. It's critical for these employees.
Thank you, Mr. Ward.
And Madam Chair, members, Greg Tavell is here to provide technical information or other information on how this might all work. He's the audit director for DHS.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. I'm Greg Tavell from the Department of Human Services. I'm here to help explain any technical aspects of the bill that you might have questions on. Since I am part of the executive branch and this is not in the governor's bill, we are not supporting or speaking against this bill, just simply for support, technical support, if you have any questions. One thing I would like to point out, Mary did explain things fairly well, although she did say that this is no cost, no change. That's not exactly correct, as pension expenses can change from year to year. This bill will put their pension expenses on a cost basis. If those change from year to year, it's possible by a number of employees that are there earning pension benefits, the amounts can change. Therefore, this could be a cost or a savings to the state in future years, depending on how their pensions change.
Thank you, Mr. Travell. Senator Erickson Ropes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question, and maybe it's for the department or Senator Berglund. Is this a structural problem? If it's something that we're having to deal with a facility last year, and then now we have other facilities, are they supposed to come to us one at a time to adjust if they change ownership? I wonder That makes me wonder if it's a structural problem in some of our policies.
Madam Chair.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Senator Erickson-Robes, this is not a structural problem. I'm not convinced that it doesn't cost money. All the other ones of these I've ever seen cost money. And I know that it's been done for at least one other facility in the past, and that one is usually cited as a precedent for why we should do it for everybody else. But that one did cost money, and it was in the budget, and it was done in a year when we happened to have a little bit of money. So whether it costs money or saves money, it has to go to the Finance Committee, and I don't want to take up a lot of time of this committee to try to figure out if it costs or saves money. But if the homes have already been sold and the pension cost is not recognized, then it would be in the budget forecast or someplace that we would not be paying for this expense. So then you have to build it back in to the budget, is my way of thinking. And then when you build it back in, it's a cost.
Members, we have a lot of background noise, as you can tell, so if you could get closer to the microphones, that would be great. Senator Dale and then Senator Lynch.
Madam Chair, members, I do have the fiscal note in my hand, and this is when the Renville facility was in and the Thief River Falls facility was out. But it shows that the state is actually saving, after this year, about $3,000 or $4,000 each year. So some years $3,000, some years $4,000 that they're saving.
Senator Lynch.
Madam Chair and Senator Dill, my comments aren't whether or not this costs or saves money, but rather just to say, as someone who serves also on the Pension Commission, that I'm very appreciative of these entities and with Senator Dill and bringing this forward, in that this is not a situation that behooves anyone to not address in a very financially prudent way.
Any questions from members for the testifiers or for Senator Dill? If not, Senator Corrin.
Madam Chair, where would this go from here? I guess Senator Dill is saying that there's no fiscal impact, so...
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, and my good friend Senator Corrin, he didn't say that. He said it had a $4,000 or $3,000 a year fiscal to the good. That is a fiscal impact. And I don't understand the fiscal notes, so obviously we'll have time to do that once the bill is in finance.
Right. So, Madam Chair, then I would so move that Senate File 2884 be recommended to pass as amended and sent to the Finance Committee.
Thank you, Senator Corrin. Any questions? If not, all of those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed?
And then, Madam Chair.
Motion carries. Senator Corrin.
Madam Chair, it's come to my attention that Senator Kubley, that amendment is ready now. So.
Thank you, Senator Corrin. Yeah. Thank you, Senator Dill.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Yes, we have the amendment ready for Senator Kubley's bill. So
Madam Chair,
we can
finish
up that work. So we need to move the A2 amendment so that we can continue with questions. Senator Corrin?
Madam Chair, I would so move the A2 amendment to get the bill in the shape that it needs to be in.
Any questions from members? If not, all of those
Madam
in
Chair,
favor?
Madam Chair, I'd like to see the amendment. I'd like to see
sir.
The amendment.
What's going on outside? So what? So what band is playing out here?
But they have pom poms.
couldn't do it during committee meetings. All right, what is this?
Okay, are you ready, Senator? Could we move? So all of those in favor of the A2 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? The amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair, if there's no further discussion on Senate File 3313, I would be ready to move that bill be recommended to pass as amended. And Madam Chair, I would have the question of where would this be sent to the chair?
Well, I think it could go to the floor, Madam Chair, I guess. I don't think it's a controversial bill. I guess I'd leave it up to the committee there. I think it could be a consent calendar item, but, you know, that's kind of a committee decision. So.
Madam Chair, so then I would
Senator Coring, if you could wait for a sec. Senator Hand has a question.
Thank
Senator
you.
Hand.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Kubli, or maybe one of your testifiers, I'm just trying to, out of curiosity, I guess, does the is there no waiver provision in the licensing process today? I mean, you're describing a situation that seems a little unique, and it would seem to me that under those circumstances that the licensing board could say, well, this is a qualified doctor, even though they may not, you know, have met every particular letter of the. But is there no waiver process to allow for an unusual circumstance like this?
Well, Madam Chair, we'll call on Mr. Deal to respond to that. He's met with the Board of Practice, so.
Madam Chair, Senator Hand, no. In fact, one of the options that we presented to the Board of Medical Practice was that with at least maybe within parameters, they'd be given discretion. That board would rather have a bright line test. So, but to repeat, they find no diminution in the protection of the citizens by going to three tries to four tries.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
So, thank you. Any more questions, Senator Coring?
So, Madam Chair, I would again, but I'm going to alter my motion. First, I would ask if there's any objections from any members if I make the motion to have it go on the consent calendar. Is there an objection? Okay, then I won't do that.
Okay.
I won't do that then. All right. So, Madam Chair, I so move that Senate File 3313, as amended, be recommended to pass and sent to the Senate floor.
Any questions? All of those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The motion
okay.
is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you, Senator Cooley. Senator Sharon.
Good afternoon, Chair Marty and members of the Commission. I'm here to present on Senate File 2470.
Okay.
This is a nursing facility pension cost reimbursement bill. I have an amendment that I'd like to offer to put the bill in the order in which it's intended.
The A1 amendment is in the packets. Is there any discussion? If not, Senator Coring or Senator Torres-Ray moves that the A1, that we adopt the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Go ahead, Senator Sharon.
Thank you, Senator Marty.
This is a
bill that requires the employment pension costs at Sibley County Nursing Facility be treated as Public Employees Retirement Association costs for medical assistance reimbursement purposes. And I understand that you heard a similar bill earlier, so I won't go any further excepting to introduce you to the owners of the Gaylord Oak Terrace Nursing Home who are here to answer questions for you. And to give you a little background in history on what has occurred with this nursing home in a very small community in my district that is one of the major employers in that district. So with that, I would like to introduce to you the owners, Mr. Mick Montague and Mr. Dennis Hood, who are here representing the nursing home.
Welcome, and I understand you have a brief statement and then questions. Okay, please go ahead then, either one of you.
Well, Mr. Montague and myself purchased the Gaylord Nursing Home in December of this past year. We had entered into dialogue with the city of Gaylord approximately a year ago. At that time, the nursing home was operating in the red. The idea to add on assisted living, memory loss, along to have a complete continuum of care was discussed. We closed on the facility on December 1st. It's the third largest employer in the area, approximately 140 employees, full and part-time at the Gaylord Nursing Home. Most of the people that are employed there have been long-time employees. They have been subject to the para, so they've always had a pension fund, and it's something that we would certainly like to continue. And with that, that's all I think as far as statement is concerned.
Okay. Questions from members of the committee? If not, Senator
Mr. Chairman, this has to go to finance also.
Senator Berglund moves that Senate File 2470 as amended be recommended pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. Is there any further discussion on that motion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Sharon.
Thank you very much.
Is Senator Vanderveer here? You are. Okay, we might want to take you quickly first because I think Senator Betzold's bill is a lengthier thing. So if you're available and ready, we could take you right away. Welcome to the committee. Go ahead on Senate File 2873.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I have an oral amendment just to make a technical correction to put the bill in the shape I'd like it.
Senator Higgins moves the oral amendment, which says
Page 2, line 2, delete 55 and insert 18.
Okay.
That would be it, Mr. Chair.
And that would be consistent with what you're trying to do in the other page of the bill.
Yes.
Any discussion on that technical amendment? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Okay.
Motion prevails.
That was an oral amendment.
Senator Vanderveer, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This Senate File 2873 is intended to provide consumers with the greatest amount of choice when seeking adult day services. And what it simply restates, I think, what the legislature's intent is, and that is that they be offered the greatest possible choice and the opportunity to have the types of services that they like and that they feel work best for them. So I have Mary Johnson here who would be the next would be our first testifier.
Please step outside with conversations. Go ahead.
To explain the need for the bill and the clarification.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself.
Thank you. My name is Mary Johnson, and I'm an RN, and 12 years ago I started a program in family foster care home providing care also for day programming. It has been quite a success, and at one point it was 55 and older. We had many requests for people from 18 to 55 not wanting your normal institutional daycare setting and would like a more family setting. So we started the variance process that they could come into our home. Thenceforth, it's gotten quite confusing. We do have quite a few handicapped individuals that would like this service, and so we're asking it to be clarified that it's 18 and older instead of 55 and older, and anyone under having to receive a variance process. And it's getting quite confusing with the county and funding issues also. So that's what we're asking. And I have some of the family members here that would advocate for this type of service.
The committee.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Victoria Limburger. This is my sister, Nancy Castoris. If the last name sounds familiar, yeah, that was our dad. Nancy has been living with the Johnsons now for a little over, almost 2 years. It took me almost 4 years to find the appropriate setting for Nancy. We had her in a corporate daycare. She didn't like being with all the old people. She really does need nursing home level of care. And this has been the best thing we've ever been able to find. And now we're being told that perhaps we have to put her in a nursing home part of the time, and then she can go to adult daycare someplace else. It doesn't make sense. Please don't take our choice away.
My name is Jennifer Ladowick, and this is my son, Michael Ladowick, and he's been living with the Johnsons since September. Michael was adopted from Romania when he was 3. We have 11 children, and when Michael was getting to the age of 18, he was like, what next, Mom, Dad? My husband's back here, and he couldn't live on his own. He needed supervision, but he wanted to be able to be on his own, and the Johnsons have graciously taken Michael in September. He has flourished. He has had educational training there. He's been able to work, grow, feel like he's moving on into his adulthood stage, and just is thriving. And we couldn't even imagine him in an institutional care setting since he's been home with us for all these years and homeschooled, and that's been his environment. So he moved from one home to another home, and it was such a smooth transition. And we are so thankful, and we don't want this choice taken away from us. Thank you.
Ellen Gill.
Thank you.
Ellen is back there. She does not feel comfortable, but she said I could speak for her. Her husband needs to receive respite services, which we also can provide in the foster home day program. And I think I can speak that without that program, Ellen, you would not have respite services. Is that correct?
That's correct. Having Bob and Mary Johnson to give me relief, caregivers, having our loved ones at home with us is very important, and having that same kind of respite in a family environment rather than a corporate environment means all the world to me. Please don't take that away.
Thank you very much, ma'am.
Thank you.
Senator Vandermeer.
Mr. Chair, these types of services, the adult foster care and family adult daycare services, provide a family atmosphere at a more affordable cost to the state than the other options. We're not asking that it be preferred, but that it be allowed to, and that it be available to all of the people in the state of Minnesota is my concern. And recently, the department appears to be making it more and more difficult for providers to continue offering these services. And I think they are, the state is really benefits from them being readily accessible and would benefit from actually expanding them. So I would ask for your support for this legislation.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the committee? Senator Prettner-Solin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if somebody from the department is here to be able
to
respond.
We will ask for that. We also had one other witness who wanted to speak to the bill. So, any other questions for these witnesses? If not, thank you all very much. Is there anybody from DHS who wanted to speak to this? And I know, Mr. Larson, you said you wanted to speak to it. Well. Okay. Go ahead. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Alex Bartolik, and I am the Director for Disability Services at the Minnesota Department of Human Services.
And if you could speak loud, we've got somebody decided to schedule a concert right over our heads for some unknown reason. Please.
And I apologize. I couldn't hear the question. I just heard that I was asked to come up.
Senator Prettner-Solin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll try to be more articulate. I think I wanted a general response, but do we now only have licensed adult daycare for 55 and older? Is that across the board? And why have we not extended it down to age 18? And is there a cost differential?
I'm going to let Jerry Kerber from licensing answer those questions.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Jerry Kerber, and I'm the Licensing Division Director at the Department of Human Services. And Senator Prentner-Soland, to answer your question, under the current law, adult day services are allowed for people who are 55 and older, but there is a variance provision that allows somebody who is under age 55 to also get those services. And so the current program that you heard about, wonderful program, does not need any law changes really to continue. There is a variance process so that the counties can be involved in making sure that it is, if there is going to be somebody in an adult day services program that's generally in effect for some elderly folks, that it's really the right thing for that individual. That's kind of how the system is set up now, but there's nothing to prevent it.
Well, Mr. Chair,
actually,
I'm remembering my parents did adult daycare, and they did adult foster care is what they did, and they usually had people over age 55. But I remember them having a young man in his 30s. Why would we not want to change the law to 18? Or do you have a response to that?
Mr. Chair and Senator Prentner-Soland, the part right now, you're correct. Adult foster care is available for any adult, 18 and over. The difference here is for the family adult day services portion only, about lowering that. And I think my colleague can speak to that a little bit more clearly. But one of the ideas is that there are other options maybe that are more appropriate for people who are between the ages of 18 and 55 categorically, not in an individual basis, certainly for everybody, but the types of services that are provided in an adult daycare program tend to be not what we would expect for integration of individuals, perhaps with traumatic brain injury, into the community, maybe supported employment arrangements or some other services that might be more appropriate. And that's why kind of the history has been that the age 55, which at that time anyway corresponded with the elderly waiver, and my understanding is that there have been some changes there, but that it was designed to be a day service for elderly folks.
Mr. Chair, does it not make sense, though, Mr. Kerber, to have an option or a choice like this? Is there a reason why you would not want to open it up to this?
Mr. Chair and Senator Prentner-Soland, there are some other issues with the way it's being opened up here, I think, that maybe I would just try to shine some light on. The way the bill is structured is that anybody who currently has an adult foster care license, and there's roughly about 5,000 of those in the state, at their choice, they could now start providing adult day services under this bill. The way it would work now under the current system is that they would apply. They would contact the county and say, we also want to be licensed to provide adult day services, and therefore, prior to their beginning to provide that service, the county would do a review and determine whether or not they meet the criteria, and then give them a license, and then they can go ahead and provide that service. The way the bill is now is that anybody who already has a license for service A can start providing service B. At some point, the county may catch up with that and say, oh, you are providing adult day services. Okay, well, then now, next time we review you, we're going to have to make sure that you're complying with the adult day services standards as well.
Mr. Chair, one more question. So would it require different, review or credentialing of the home in order for it to offer both services?
Mr. Chair and Senator Prentner-Soland, yes, and that is not really changing under the bill. It still is saying that if somebody is going to provide, if an adult foster care provider elects to provide adult day services, they have to meet all the licensing standards for the adult day services. It's just that they aren't going to have to demonstrate that in advance of deciding to provide those services. And then the other part is, some of those service standards, the department is interested in making a review of those standards to see if they are really appropriate and would meet, pass muster with CMS about whether or not that's actually going to be, those are the right standards to draw some of that federal money, the MA funding that's sought in the last section of the bill.
Okay, so Mr. Chair, one more question then. So the Johnston adult foster care providers could request licensing for adult daycare as well as the adult foster care?
Mr. Chair and Senator Pretnisolo, they already have, and they are licensed. Yeah, they're operating, and you know, and we've never heard anything but wonderful things about their program. Okay. They can continue to operate, you know, as long as they wish.
Senator Vanderveer.
And Mr. Kerbert, wouldn't anybody who was going to offer adult day services have to get that license certification and comply with the rules that we wrote 3 years ago?
Mr. Chair and Senator Vanderveer, yes, they would have to comply. They would not have to get prior approval. The licensure requirement would be gone here. If they have license A, they can provide service B. But they would have to meet their criteria, right, or the licensing standards.
Yes, and so I don't think that's really an issue. But the issue with the need to have a variance to do this, I think when referrals are made by social workers and others, they look down the list of providers and they would immediately